quiz number two, problem one. So you are asked to identify stereo centers and then identify the configuration of those stereo centers. So this problem did, in a sense, I guess you could say, have a trick question to it, because the left carbon that has a dash on it is not a stereo center, because that position has two methyl groups on it. And if you have two of the same substituent, that means if you reversed them, you get the exact same thing back again, which means it's not a stereo center. So only the carbon that had the oxygen and the nitrogen on it was a stereo center. The first rule we apply is highest atomic number. So oxygen is going to be priority number one. The nitrogen is going to be priority number two. Then we have two carbons attached. One of those carbons only has one carbon on it. The other carbon has two carbons on it. So the one with two carbons is more important than the one with one. So this left-hand side is priority three, and the right-hand side is priority four. But this molecule is not S, because the lowest priority substituent is currently not oriented in the back of the molecule. So if you wanted to really make sure that you were doing this correctly, it would have been advisable to rewrite the molecule. And I'm going to rotate around the single bond here, where I'll move the propyl group into the position where the nitrogen is, move the nitrogen where the oxygen is, and then move the oxygen around where the propyl group is. If I do that, I get the following. Which now we can see that the most important groups, 1, 2, 3, are going in a clockwise direction, so the molecule has, or that stereocenter has, an R configuration. Next molecule. This one does have two stereocenters, because both of those positions where there's dashes or wedges, there are four unique substituents. Because from either one of those positions, if you go one way around the ring versus the other, you're going to get two different types of groups. So the top carbon, oxygen, is priority number one. We have two carbons attached. One of the carbons has a carbon and two hydrogens. The other carbon has a carbon deuterium hydrogen. Since deuterium is a higher mass number, it beats out hydrogen. So that part, direction along the ring is higher priority. And since the hydrogen's already in back, then this is R. Now let me rewrite the molecule so I have some more room to show you. Now the other stereocenter, it is the carbon that is the highest priority. So again, one side of the ring is more important than the other. The top has an oxygen on it. The bottom direction doesn't, at least not until you get all the way around. So the top is higher priority than the bottom. Deuterium is higher priority than hydrogen. So this looks S, but remember that if the hydrogen is pointed towards you, which it is in this case, that you have to reverse what you see, and so this is still R. Questions about any of those three stereocenters? Yes? This one higher priority for this one, because it's a carbon with an oxygen versus a carbon without an oxygen. So you don't go all the way to the oxygen first, you go just to what's attached first.
there is an oxygen, where on the other equivalent position there's no oxygen, that's why that one's more important. Other questions on the one so far? All right, so let's do the last one of those.
This was, again, a sort of trick question, because, again, there's a carbon that has two of the same substituent on it, so even though it's got a wedge, it's not a stereocenter.
The carbonyl, the position of the carbon-oxygen double bond, that is also not a stereocenter because it's planar. If it's planar, it is its own mirror plane at that position, and so no R or S configuration is possible. So only the middle carbon is a stereocenter. And in order to answer this properly, we have to use phantom atoms. So let's go ahead and do that expansion.
So for the carbon, we double the oxygen. For the oxygen, we double the carbon. And now we can compare. Three of the substituents on that stereocenter all have carbons at the first place you come to. So we're going to compare a carbon that only has hydrogens, which that's going to end up being lower, versus a carbon that has oxygens. Well, both of those carbons both have two oxygens, so you can't decide at that point which one's more important. So you have to go one more step out. You have to go along the oxygen itself. Well, on the right-hand side, oxygen's connected to carbon. On the left-hand side, oxygen's only connected to hydrogen. So the carbon of that phantom atom beats out the hydrogen, even though it's a real hydrogen. And so the right-hand group is actually the higher priority. So this looks S, but one more time, because the hydrogen is pointed towards you, you have to reverse what you see, so it is really R. All right, moving on to the nomenclature question. So this compound has five carbons in it, so it's a form of pentanol. Be careful with the alcohol names. The N in pentanol never goes away. So I know there's this language rule that we've gone over where sometimes an E is there, or sometimes an E is not there, or sometimes an A, but the N part, the main part of the name, never disappears. So it is pentanol. With an N. The alcohol position is at the one position because that's the end of the carbon chain. So this is going to be pentane one all or one pentanol. There are two different substituents. There's a methyl substituent, and then the deuterium has the substituent named deutero. So just like chlorine's chloro, fluorine fluoro, deuterium deutero. The deuterium's at the one position, the methyl group's at the four, and because the D in deutero is lower than the M in methyl, deuterium comes first. Then, it does have a stereocenter, and it is in the S configuration. OH group is first priority. Carbon chain second, deuterium third.
You don't use a number when you only have one stereocenter to show where that stereocenter is at. If there's only one, it's automatically apparent. So for single stereocenter problems, you don't use numbers. Questions about this one? Yes. Does the what? I'm sorry?
It either has to be before the all or before the pent. So you could have said S1-deutero-4-methyl-1-pentanol. But you had to have the 1 to show where the alcohol is. Somewhere.
All right, then, the three terms that we had, enantiomers, diastereomers, and epimers. Most of you got the definitions correct. Here and there, you might have had just a small problem with language, and not even a translation issue, just saying exactly the right thing. For enantiomers, you could have said that those are non-superimposable mirror images, which means that all the stereocenters from one enantiomer to the other are inverted from each other. Where most of you might have lost points on that is drawing the example molecules. So very, very common example, or there are a lot of variations on this idea. You wanted to show a dash going to a wedge, but realize that I just wrote 2 of exactly the same molecule, because this molecule has 3 methyl groups attached to a central carbon, and since you have 3 of the same group, it's not a stereocenter. So because even though you're showing the dash going to a wedge, you haven't actually changed the molecule. So you needed to make sure that you really had something that had a set of enantiomers. So an example of enantiomers would be have something where there definitely is 1 stereocenter and then showing it inverting. Now, diastereomers, you couldn't just say that they're not superimposable images, because that's true of enantiomers as well. So you did have to say they were non-mirror images. And you could have also commented on how many stereocenters change, but you got to be really careful how you state it there. Only 1 needs to change. So it's not 2 or more, it's only 1 or more stereocenters. But you can't just say that either. You have to say not all of them change. Because if you just say 1 or more, you could flip all of them, and then it'd be an enantiomer again. So a diastereomer is a molecule or a set of molecules in which some, but not all, of the stereocenters have inverted. So you could have had an example like the following. Notice that even though I'm using methyl groups, this does not have the same problem of what I showed you up above, because each of these really is a stereocenter. So it's not that you use methyl group that some of you lost points for, it's just got to make sure you really have a stereocenter. Now an epimer, that's just a subset of a diastereomer. And there, since they're diastereomers, that means you have to have 2 stereocenters at least on the molecule. If you only have 1 stereocenter and it's flipped, that's an enantiomer, not an epimer. So diastereomers, you have to have 2 stereocenters or more, but out of all the stereocenters, only 1 changes configuration. Questions? Then the last problem, is it chiral or not? So we had 3 different molecules. So, first molecule, you could not just say it has stereocenters, because the last molecule also has stereocenters. But the last molecule is achiral, the first molecule is chiral. Why? Because besides the fact that it has stereocenters, it has no internal mirror plane of symmetry. So if you said something about the fact that it has stereocenters, that's correct, but not enough. You had to then say that the molecule had no mirror plane. Or, as some of you said, If you made the mirror image of that molecule, you'll get a molecule that's a different molecule, which that's correct. And that would mean it would have enantiomers, which means it would be chiral.
So molecule one is chiral. Jumping to the end, because we do have a mirror plane, and because we do have stereocenters, that means it's meso, which means it's achiral. And I guess up at top, what we could do is we could point out and say no mirror plane. Now the middle molecule has a mirror plane also. Chops right through the middle of the molecule. But this molecule is not meso. Why? Because it does not have any stereocenters even. If you go from either the positions that has a wedge or a dash, you can go around either direction, you'd get exactly the same thing again. So it has no stereocenters. And that's why it is a chiral. Now, if you said the mirror image would overlap with itself, that is true. And so as long as you did not say it's meso, that would have been a right answer. Only if you said it's meso would it then be wrong. Questions? Then we don't really have time to go over all of exam one, but we did review problem one this morning in the other section. That was the smog diagram. And I figure you all might like a little review on how to prepare smog diagrams, since you're going to have them again in the future. So, the problem we had was this. Compound that had both an anion and a radical to it. So I think that where the largest problem was with this problem, aside from not quite knowing how to do a smog diagram, is knowing how to write the structure out, knowing how many hydrogens are around. So let's do the interpretation of the line structure first. How many carbons are there on this molecule? Five. For the leftmost carbon, since it's got a triple bond, there's only going to be one hydrogen attached to it. For the next carbon over, since it's already got a triple and a single bond, nothing else extra goes on it. The next position over, the negative charge would be due to, for example, a hydrogen leaving, but leaving without any of its electrons. But if that's involving only one hydrogen, that means there's still one more hydrogen left. Similarly, if we have a radical, that would be a case where a hydrogen left with just one electron. But that again means there's one hydrogen left. The last carbon is a methyl group, and so you're going to have three hydrogens on it. Now, how do you determine hybridization? Well, hybridization, we care about sigma bonds or lone pairs. Individual electrons don't count because they don't have the repulsive force. And pi bonds, since they are effectively made from one electron on each atom, they also don't have any repulsive force. So looking from left to right, on the left we only have two sigma bonds. So that's going to be sp hybridization. So is the next carbon over. Ooh, dear. Has anyone got a purple pen? Thank you. Forgot to grab one. So since there are four pairs of electrons, three bonds and a lone pair, that means it's sp3 hybridized. The next position over, because it's a radical, there's only three sigma bonds, it's sp2 hybridized. And then the last one, again, has three sigma bonds, so it's sp3 hybridized. Now, something that seems to be confusing some of you is
A bond itself does not have a hybridization. Some of you are trying to say sp and show the bond as being sp, or the bond being sp2. And no, the way that we do this model is each atom has its own individual hybridization, and all of the hybrid order orbitals on one atom are the same hybrid. That's the point of hybridization. They're supposed to be the same. Where they overlap, that's a bond, and the bond's either going to be sigma or pi. But bonds don't have sp or sp2 hybridization. So the first carbon, the second carbon, since they're both sp hybridized, each one would have its own pair of sp orbitals. The next carbon over, since it's sp3, that means it's going to have four equivalent orbitals. Next one over, since it's sp2, that means three orbitals. And then the last one, sp3 again, which means four orbitals. So again, notice that on each atom, it's either two, three, or four hybrids that exist, and all of the orbitals on an atom are of the same hybridization. With the one exception that for the sp and sp2 cases, we're going to have some leftover p orbitals. Now for sp, since only two orbitals were used to make hybrids, we have two p orbitals left over. And sp2, there's only one leftover, you could say, orbital. And sp3 does not have p orbitals. Some of you are trying to put p orbitals in sp3 positions. But in sp3, you've used up the s and all three p orbitals. So there's nothing left. Now there's hydrogens that I don't want to forget about. One there, one over here, one here, three here. And then there are two pi bonds. Each of the interacting set of p orbitals on that triple bond has a pi bond. And everywhere else where orbitals directly touch, those are all sigma bonds. So there's a complete Smog diagram for this molecule. Questions on how I did this? All right, so we have two activities for today. One is if you have not finished your IR, you, of course, may feel free to continue doing your IR analysis. I would ask that those of you who already did it once, but maybe I suggested you do it a second time, give anyone that didn't get their first time in a chance to get their spectrum first. However, everybody got through this morning, so I figure we'll be fine in terms of time. How many of you do have IRs do you need to acquire? Only a very few of you, so we'll be fine time-wise there. The second activity is I did prepare a new TLC stain. It is working much better than the one last year, so this recipe appears to be a lot better. One thing that I didn't expect, and I guess I should have taken into account, you need to heat up the TLC plates, which since they've got a plastic backing, it's possible for that plastic backing to melt. So let me tell you how to handle the plates in this stain development. First of all, don't use your fingers to dip the plates into the TLC mixture because para-aldehyde may not be too toxic in its own self, but you mix it up with concentrated sulfuric and glacial acetic acids. So just because it is a rather acidic environment, don't want to be dipping your hands in there. That and you'll smell like anise all day long. Dip your TLC plate completely in, pull it back out again. Kind of wave it a bit to get whatever stain that can drip off to get it to come off. Then I would suggest possibly putting it on a paper towel, something flat. And that way when you heat it, it won't deform. It won't crinkle up too much. You do want to heat it for a while. The plate itself will turn a pink or purplish color. And then some of your dots may turn yellow, We saw purple, a dark purple, saw a dark blue this morning. Some of them will appear to stay white, and the fact that it doesn't have color, while the other parts, the other dots do, that in itself is color information. So this information that you're going to get may help you distinguish one compound from another. If you had multiple compounds that all had the same RIF values, but one turns yellow and one turns pink on this stain, then you can tell them apart. So you should incorporate that color information into your lab report. And just for this audio record, the lab report now, I'm going to push back and let you turn it in on Friday of this week. So IR or TLC, that's all you need to be doing for today. Questions? So the TLC plate you already made, if you threw it away already, then you'll just have to say in your lab report that the TLC plate was unavailable for staining. But don't go through the hassle of making a new one, because I don't think we even have the chemicals out for it. So you use the TLC plates you already made, dip those, heat them up, and you'll see the color change. Now, the plate, once you've developed it, may have a trace of your original compounds, but and you shouldn't dispose of it at home, but if you wanted to take it home to scan it or to more carefully write your observations down, that's fine. Just please bring them back here to get rid of once you're completely done with them. Anticipating a question that's going to come up for this experiment, the TLC experiment, as well as the spectroscopy experiment, once we end up turning that in. If you are going to turn a lab report in by email, you may scan the TLC plates or your spectrum and attach that along with your lab report. Or if you don't have a scanner, don't know how to use a scanner, it's a big hassle for you to do it. For the spectrum, you can just hand that in person. So that even if you want to do an emailed lab report, you can email the lab report, but just turn the spectrum in person, and that would be perfectly fine. The TLC plates I don't actually need in person, as long as you've got your color information, if you still have your plate, or your RF values. Neutron, you had a question? Well, you heat the whole plate. So you're going to dip the whole plate in the stain and then heat the whole plate up.
The plate with the
non-compound? Any plate that you took. Because any plate that you had RF information, you want some color information for as well. Yes? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't tell you that. We have the equivalent of a mega-powered hair dryer called a heat gun. So I mean, it's basically like a hair dryer, except that this can get really, really, really hot. So again, I would suggest putting the TLC plates just on a small piece of paper towel so it stays flat, and then just beat the crap out of it. Now, you'll see a color change, and most people are getting the spots to change colors. Your TLC plate will get darker and darker and darker as you continue heating it. But you can tell that there are colors appearing in the spots, and as long as it's not totally deforming because it's too hot, go ahead and let it heat up to make sure that you do visualize those dots. Not all compounds will respond, though, so if you're heating it and your plate is turning black, well, then you should just go ahead and give up. Yes? Other may not be hot enough, and this will take so little time. I mean, yes, you might have to wait around, but we do have two heat guns, so that helps a bit. The TLC stain, I'll go ahead and leave out over here, but please, if you spill, clean it up a little bit. This room's going to smell of anise powerfully anyways by the end of the day. And wherever you're heating your TLC plates up, if you get some of that to come through the paper towel and get onto the benchtop, please just make sure you clean that up before you leave. Yes?
How long do you keep the piercing in the chamber?
Oh, The TLC plate, you literally just dip in and then pull back out. You don't actually have to let it react. The reaction will occur as you're heating it.